righty. Okay, so we're now, this is a Monday, January 12? 11? January 11. We're talking about chapter 20 and the Mallet Aspartate shuttle. So, and notice, if you would, which membrane is it having to shuttle this stuff through? What membrane is it of the two? The inner one, because the outer one is what? It's permeable to virtually everything. Okay, so you got the malate going in here, and immediately it gets reoxidized back to oxaloacetate. And let's see here. Then the NADH is recreated. And so this whole process, the entire purpose of this malate aspartate shuttle is to bring that NADH inside without loss of reductive power. But then what happens? Well, my goodness, this oxaloacetate gets transaminated by a glutamate oxaloacetate transaminase. In other words, this has got this glutamate has got a nitrogen on it, and so the oxaloacetate does not, and they simply exchange. So the oxaloacetate gets the nitrogen, becomes aspartate. The glutamate loses its nitrogen, becomes an alpha-ketoglutarate. Then the aspartate moves out, there's exchange here, this simply returns, and the whole process, as you can see, alpha-ketoglutarate becomes glutamate, aspartate becomes oxaloacetate, that malate shifts in. This whole process is driven not by an energy production, because there's no energy loss between NADH going in and NADH already in. This is simply mass action driven, and so high levels of this will force the direction of the reaction toward the interior, and the whole process occurs. It's remarkably complicated. You wonder why God did it that way. It's one of the questions we'll have to ask when we get to heaven. That's what's neat. I love being a biochemist, because I know that I'm going to get to spend a lot of time with people who know what's going on, and I'll be able to get some of these questions answered. It's going to be nice. You're not going to stand around and strum harps all day and be bored. I absolutely guarantee you that. Not up there. Okay, now, what of this do you have to know for a test? You have to know the name of the shuttle, and you have to know that it is lossless for NADH. Really very simple. I'm not going to ask you to regurgitate this whole process. If you go to graduate school, they may ask you to regurgitate it. I'm not going to. It really will depend on your area of interest when you get to graduate school. But the name of the shuttle and the fact that it transfers NADH without loss into the interior of the mitochondria. There's another shuttle that's also prominent. And it's difficult to see, I'm pretty sure, is called this alpha-glycerol phosphate shuttle. And again, we start off here. We take this dihydroxyacetone phosphate and we reduce it with NADH to make NAD+. This makes an alpha-glycerol phosphate. This then transfers its electrons to an intermediate coenzyme that contains FAD and FADH2. That then goes on and enters into the electron transport system. So this transfer then actually is a loss. There is a loss of reducing power because you move it from an NADH to an FAD. An NADH can have three ATP equivalents, is thought to have the reduction power of three ATP equivalents, whereas FAD is thought to only have two, and we'll see that in a little bit. So the alpha-glycerol phosphate shuttle transfers the NADH directly to an FAD a flavoprotein, and then that enters directly into, and this is a part of, the electron transport system. So that's the primary loss there. Then there's some stuff to fill in here, some details that you have listed there that are blank on your page, I believe. Is that correct? All right. So here's the specifics of the aspartate malate shuttle. NADH reduction produces malate from oxaloacetate by the C malate dehydrogenase. That lowercase c indicates cytosolic malate dehydrogenase. Malate and alpha-ketoglutarate are exchanged through a protein, through a transport protein. Malate is oxidized to oxaloacetate by mitochondrial malate dehydrogenase. There are two isoforms of that same enzyme. There's a cytosolic and a mitochondrial form. What happens is then the oxaloacetate reads ammonia from glutamate and becomes aspartate. Glutamate donates ammonia to oxaloacetate alpha-ketoglutarate. This is called glutamate deoxaloacetate transaminase. The glutamate and aspartate exchange by transporter with the cytosolic compartment. 4-5 occur in mirror image in the cytosol. NADH shuttle begins again. This form of NADH shuttle does not lose reducing power. So basically, the bottom line is the malate, what I'm asking you to know, the malate-aspartate shuttle is underlined here. Malate-aspartate shuttle is a shuttle that does not reduce any power. The alpha-glycerol phosphate shuttle, NADH reduction produces an alpha-ketoglutarate phosphate from DHAP. Alpha-glycerol phosphate transfers reducing power to FAD and FADH coenzyme form. That ends up producing DHAP again by the mitochondrial alpha-glycerol phosphate dehydrogenase. Reducing power is now as FADH2. The two should be subscripted, of course. FAD and H2 enters cytosolic electron transport system coenzyme Q. This form of NADH shuttle does lose reducing power because FADH2 is not as powerful as is not as powerfully reduced. May I go on? You guys all got all that filled in? All right. Other important shuttles. This is a citrate malate shuttle and is designed to get acetyl-CoA into the cytosol. Okay. So this is on the third page. This is known as the citrate malate shuttle. On looking under the mitochondrial side of the diagram, you see acetyl-CoA here. All right. Now, acetyl-CoA has two inputs from here, and I want you to draw those in. I want you to draw one from fatty acid oxidation. Acetyl-CoA can be produced from fatty acid oxidation in the mitochondria. The other is from pyruvate, which means that it's essentially coming from glycolysis. You wonder why glycolysis, why isn't there acetyl-CoA out here? It all depends where the transportation occurs, but it is what it is. Now, if you have excess carbohydrates in your diet or excess energy, you have a tendency to accumulate what? Fat. Exactly right. Now, oddly enough, why don't you accumulate oil in your body? Notice we say you accumulate fat. Fat. Why don't you accumulate oil? Well, when you think about it, when you die, what happens to the adipose tissue? Does it become solidified or does it remain a liquid? It solidifies. So the fats, the lipids that are in your body, when they reach room temperature, become a solid. That's why you have fat. This is where you get fat accumulation as opposed to lipid. Imagine, and it would not be difficult to do, actually. I can't imagine that God wouldn't have done this, but he didn't, that we could have had oil stored. I mean, it's at our temperature, it's fluid anyway. The fat that we have is fluid. We couldn't metabolize it if it was a solid. But we could be a fluid. So that means when people die, you would see them, the sheets and the ground and the dirt and all that would become oil-soaked as the oil seeped out of the body. It's kind of an odd thought, isn't it?
I don't know why I go there. But at any rate, so what happens is if you have excess energy, you have excess acetyl-CoA, primarily carbohydrate. This acetyl-CoA then needs to be made into fat for fat storage. What happens is that the mitochondria is not where fatty acid synthesis occurs. The fatty acid synthesis occurs in the cytosol. So the extra carbohydrate that's coming in is made into acetyl-CoA. It's transferred out as citrate. The citrate then ends up in the cytosol under the influence of citrate, ATP citrate lyase, and gets broken down and gets reformed into acetyl-CoA. And then several steps later, you're either forming a fatty acid or you can make cholesterol and other steroids. So that's why there's this shuttle, because there is a distinct difference. Fatty acid oxidation occurs in the interior of the mitochondria. Fatty acid synthesis occurs in the cytosol, and therefore you had to get those extra acetyl-CoA units out into the cytosol, and you do that through citrate. All right, blue citrate is centered with takes place. Citrate is precursor of fatty acid synthesis. All right, certainly where we get. All right, now you make plenty of ATP in the interior of the mitochondria, but you use it outside of the mitochondria. How does the ATP get outside of the mitochondria? It does not diffuse because it's highly charged. Notice the ATP here actually has a -4 charge on it. So it has to be transported. Well, there turns out to be an adenine nucleotide translocator, which is another fancy word for a transporter. It will allow ATP to go out and ADP to come in, to exchange. It has that nice exchange right there. Except there's a big problem. What'll happen with that? Charge. Well, how do you balance a charge? Well, this is where this comes in. There is another transporter, a phosphate translocator, that allows phosphate to come in, hydroxide to come out, and through other means, there is an electronic balance. But this is one of the ways that it maintains a balance, that the phosphate will be brought in, hydroxide out, and so while this is a charge, it doesn't really explain how the charge difference occurs there, does it? Because this is actually a charge, a balanced situation there. I'll have to take a look at it. I've forgotten what transporter it is that creates that charge, allows for the charge balancing of it. But nevertheless, there has to be a charge balance. Even though my diagram here doesn't appear to help much with it. Okay, let's go on. Do you have anything to fill in there at the bottom, page 3? Okay, let's go ahead. You see page 4, ladies and gentlemen. Thermodynamics electron transport. Let's take a look at this. I need to actually reduce this so the whole thing gets in here. Bing, there we go. Can you still see it? Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, this is a diagram that doesn't exist in your text. It's a very handy diagram, handy-dandy diagram. You've got some blanks to fill in there. NADH is highly reduced with a -3.14 value. Oxygen is highly oxidized with plus 0.815 of voltage value. All right, so let's take a look at this. Here... Here at the bottom here is the oxygen, and up here, highly reduced, highly oxidized. And so notice what happens here. If you look, they've got this nice little diagram. They say NADH is highly reduced, which it is. And as it moves through these complexes, it increasingly becomes oxidized. As it moves into those oxidation states, you can end up extracting energy as it moves from low, from highly reduced to highly oxidized. You can see here complex 1, complex 2, complex 3, complex 4. These are proteins that have lots of metals in them and cytochromes and so on and so forth. And they are pumps. Despite what this diagram seems to indicate, they are pumps. This diagram is, in fact, incorrect in the way it draws it. I wish I could have done this a little differently, but What this says here is that NADH moves from reduced to oxidized as its electrons are transported to this complex 1, and those electrons move through complex 1. They go from highly reduced to slightly less reduced, and that energy is captured. That energy difference in voltage is captured. Now, how is it captured is the question. What I need for you to do is, and I don't have a good pen here, but where this complex 1 is, complex 1, from, I'm just being arbitrary, from left to right, I want you to draw an arrow. I want you to put a hydrogen here and a hydrogen here. I want you to say matrix, and I want you to put intermembrane region. I'm in your way. Intermembrane region. I hope you can read that. Now, where's the matrix in the mitochondria? Where's the matrix in the mitochondria? It's the innermost part of it. Is that right? And the intermembrane region, of course, is that spot. It's this area right in here. Intermembrane region is that location. And despite the fact that I said that outer membrane is permeable to everything, the one thing it's not permeable to is what? The hydrogen ion. That's exactly correct. And therefore, the hydrogen ion is forced to accumulate in there. Now, what I'm trying to say is that these complex 1, complex 3, and complex 4 are not where ATP is synthesized. Despite the fact that it says so right here, that it's synthesized, it isn't. It's actually an ATP equivalent, but ATP is not synthesized at those locations. Hydrogens are pumped at that location. This is complex 1, complex 3, and complex 4 is a hydrogen pump and pumps hydrogen from the matrix into that intermembrane region and builds up pressure. Builds up extra energy, builds up electromotive force in that intermembrane region. So complex 1 is a proton pump, and its energy loss is the equivalent of 1 ATP. Here's where FADH2, here is where succinate and fumarate. Remember where we, in the citric acid cycle, you make FADH2? And remember when I talked about that shuttle that lost energy? The NADH goes to FADH2, that happens right here. Okay, so you could put in, and I wish I could draw it, you could put in, if you wanted to, I need to do it over here where people can see it. You could put a little at complex 2, you could make your own little mark and go, I don't care how you want to do it. NADH, NAD plus the alpha glycerol shuttle. So it loses that. It loses a bit of energy right there at that point. It all feeds into coenzyme Q. All these electrons that go complex 3, which is another pump, which then goes on to complex 4, which is another pump. And finally, all those electrons are dumped onto oxygen to produce water. And that's what you're exhaling right now. The carbon dioxide you're breathing out and the water vapor you're breathing out primarily have come from this process in the mitochondria and the loss of carbon dioxide in the citric acid cycle. There's very little other places. Now, you lose more water than you make. You lose more water than you make by this process. That's why you have to drink water. But there are certain animals and insects that are extremely efficient and actually can gain most, if not all, of their water from this process of dumping electrons onto the oxygen to produce water. All right, so electron transport system. Pump, pump, pump. ATP equivalent, ATP equivalent, ATP equivalent. They are not making ATP here. What I do want you to recall, however, is the following poisons. Retinone or amytal blocks complex 1 and will kill you. Antimyosin blocks complex 3 in bacteria and kills them, although it's not very specific and it makes people pretty sick. But it is an antibiotic. And finally, cyanide blocks complex 4. Cyanide blocks complex 4. Now you know why, among other reasons, why cyanide is a poison. It will block complex 4. And it does so very quickly, very efficiently. And once that gets blocked, things die very quickly. People have been killed. I mean, the capital punishment, one of the more benign forms of capital punishment is the gas chamber. And guess what gas they use? Hydrogen cyanide. That's exactly correct. They tell the criminal to sit down, and they strap him in so he doesn't hurt himself. And they said, when you smell something almondy, something smells like almond, take 2 deep breaths, and by the end of the second breath, you'll be dead. That's how potent cyanide is in terms, and it blocks that complex, among other things. It's not the only thing, but it does that. All right, so because I'm going to ask some questions about how all this works, and I'm going to use the poisons in helping probe whether or not you understand this whole thing. Now, this is an energy diagram here. This is an energy diagram, but it does not illustrate the actual cell biology of what's going on. That's down here at the bottom of the page. As you know, NADH2 is highly reduced with this. Is there a lot to fill in? There shouldn't be. There's some. And I'll just go through this carefully, slowly. Okay, NADH is highly reduced with a negative value. Oxygen highly oxidized with a positive value. The energy between these two compounds provides the energy for us to live. Can you believe that? The energy difference between those two compounds, that's what causes us to live. That's why I can walk around. That's why I can think. That's why I can talk. That's why you can learn. Now, 4 complexes exist to move those electrons from NADH to oxygen. Energy extracted from electrons only at 1, 3, and 4. This is illustrated here by formation of ATP. This is wrong-headed view. ATP is not synthesized into complexes, only its energy equivalent. Complex 1, 4, have the free energy available to power ATP formation. They don't actually form it there. Complex 2 accepts reducing power for FADH2, which is less reduced than NADH. Complex 4 is a site where electrons of NADH and FAD combine with hydrogen ion and oxygen form water. Complex 1 is inhibited by retinone or amytal. Complex 3 is inhibited by antimyosin A. Complex 4 is inhibited by cyanide ion. Now, complex 1, 3, and 4 appear to pump protons with their available free energy. So what is actually happening here, here's the NADH, is complex 1, protons are pumped from the matrix to the intermembrane space or region. Okay. Complex 3 here. Now, they have coenzyme Q in complex 3. They have the pump occurring at coenzyme Q in complex 3 is not a pump. Well, Q and complex 3 are so intimately physically located that for all intents and purposes, it doesn't matter they have Q or complex 3. It's this process right in here that pumps protons. And then finally, the electrons eventually go down to this complex 4, where you end up pumping more protons, and it's where the electrons eventually attach to oxygen and dump onto the oxygen with the hydrogen protons there and you make water, which you eventually either breathe out, excrete, or sweat out. So these are the pumps that are represented by the diagram, by the energy diagram up here. So you need to be able to relate those to that. Next, let's take a look at another diagram here that's perhaps more accurate. This is actually, what you're looking at is called the chemiosmotic theory. Well, poo. Chemiosmotic theory. Now, you're going to find here at the bottom, this is missing. I deleted this. I did not have you do this. We don't have time to go through this. So yours stops at, should be right about in here, so don't panic. Okay, here we have an actual, another diagram right here, where you have the outer mitochondrial membrane, the intermembrane space, the inner mitochondrial membrane. And here you have complex 1, 3, and 4, low proton concentration. These are the pumps that move the electrons in that intermembrane region. You have a high concentration and high charge of hydrogen ion. You have low concentration and low charge here on the matrix. That provides a tremendous amount of power. 1, 3, and 4 pump it up there. And there is a complex 5 called ATP synthetase. Is listed right there. It's shown in pink here and in black and white in your diagram. Complex 1 accepts electrons from NADH. Electrons from FA2 enter complex 3, but after complex 1. Hydrogen concentration builds the intermembrane space as complexes pump protons in intermembrane space, assuming oxygen is present. Hydrogen can escape because both outer and inner membranes are impermeable. Complex 5, ATP synthase, uses free energy from the electrochemical gradient formed by the pumped hydrogen ions to synthesize ATP from ADP. Now, in a good cell biology class, they would go through the details of the complex 5 structure. We don't have time to do it here. We've got other things to do. Suffice it to say, the production of ATP from the electrochemical gradient of the hydrogen ion is a sophisticated, complex process and machine. One that begs disbelief when people tell you, oh, it all occurred by accident. All right, so what happens here? Now, let me ask this question. When do you begin to produce lactate in your voluntary muscles? When do you begin to produce lactate in your voluntary muscles? I heard it. What was it? When you what? Run out of oxygen. Well, you're absolutely right. It's actually not a case of being running out of oxygen. If you were, in fact, completely out of oxygen, you'd dead. But what you're talking about is you knew that when you said it, and now what, he's teasing me. Yeah, it's when the muscle tissue is lacking in oxygen. You have not trained your heart, and you've not gotten the necessary capillary beds developed in your muscle tissue, and as you exercise, there is a lack of oxygen present. Why does that produce lactic acid? Here is the reason. Now, are you ready for this? Let's see here. Do you have a? Let's back this truck up here. So, find space. And there's plenty of space down at the bottom. Is that right? Okay. Write this phrase down. Strenuous exercise creates oxygen demand. Strenuous exercise creates oxygen demand. Circulatory system cannot meet the oxygen demand. The circulatory system cannot meet or produce or transport enough oxygen to meet the demand. Oxygen concentration in muscle cells decreases. Okay, so it said oxygen concentration in cells decreases. Do you have that? All right. Put a number 1 next to there, and up here, put a number 1 here. Right next to this O2, half O2. Put a number 1 there, and put a number 1 here. So the amount of oxygen then is now decreasing. So how would I say this? How can I say this? Electrons in the ETS begin to build up because there's no oxygen to accept them, or less oxygen to accept them. The electrons in the electron transport system begin to build up because there's a lack of oxygen to accept them. Now, what's missing here is this NADH. What I'd like you to do is write a little NADH right here, and then an arrow and make NAD plus. NADH, NAD plus. NADH, NAD plus. Put an arrow that passes through complex 1. NADH, NAD. Have that arrow. All right? So, notice when I started talking about electrons, I want you to put a number 2 here. Call that statement 2 and put a number 2 by those electrons. Next statement. As electrons begin to build up, NADH concentration begins to increase. Put that number 3. So write number 3 here next to this NADH. As the electrons begin to build up, NADH concentration begins to build up. All right, NADH concentration builds up. Next step. Available NAD plus decreases. Available NAD plus decreases. Available NAD plus decreases. The cell responds by, how can I say this? The cell responds by creating lactate from pyruvate. Lactate from pyruvate, which increases NAD plus concentration. All right. So, why do you produce lactate when you're undergoing severe or extreme exercise? And you'd have to say because there's no oxygen for the electrons to dump into, since there's no electrons for no place for electrons to go, the NADH builds up, that creates a lack of NAD plus. That lack of NAD plus can shut down glycolysis. And when you shut down glycolysis, what happens? So, you got to have NAD plus. So the body then shifts from dumping all that pyruvate into the citric acid cycle. It immediately begins to shift it more to producing lactate so it can make the NAD plus to keep glycolysis going. Any questions about that process? Does it make sense? Okay, this is experimental evidence. I don't want to go through that. Control of NAD plus. I didn't even give this to you, did I? Okay. Yeah, I gave you the condensed form. Control of ATP production. This is overall, this includes glycolysis in the citric acid cycle. I know it's difficult to see, but some of those round dots are green, means go. Some of them are supposed to be octagons like stop signs and supposed to be red, which means stop. Let's go through this quickly here. Glycolysis, here's the first one. Hexokinase actually is stimulated by phosphate. It's inhibited by glucose 6-phosphate. This is a feedback inhibitor.
this glucose 6-phosphate inhibiting hexokinase. Is there another kinase that's a part that's responsible for changing glucose into glucose 6-phosphate? Remember that? Yes, it's called glucokinase. Do you remember glucokinase? How they work together to remove glucose from the blood? But anyway, so there's no control at phosphoglucosamase. The phosphofructokinase, wow, has a tremendous number of allosteric controls. First of all, there's a feed-forward amplification, feed-forward stimulation of fructose 6-phosphate. It's stimulated by phosphate, stimulated by AMP, stimulated by high levels of ammonium ion. It's inhibited, not surprisingly, by ATP. And oddly enough, if you remember, this line goes all the way down here. It's inhibited by what? Citrate. It's also a feedback stimulated by fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. Then you go through the glycolysis, you get PEP. Pyruvate kinase is inhibited by ATP, stimulated by ATP. Here's pyruvate dehydrogenase. Notice all these things. It's feed forward, it's stimulated, feedback inhibited. The ratio of NADH to NAD plus is high, it inhibits it. It's stimulated by ATP and stimulated by calcium ion. If you remember, there's a fairly sophisticated mechanism there that deals with kinase and phosphatase for that. And finally, then you go down here and you can see the citric acid cycle. I'm not so much worried about the citric acid cycle. It pretty much runs at high levels most times. It's primarily inhibited by the NADH-NAD plus ratio. The specifics of calcium and CoAsh I don't really care about. All right, so you need to kind of know this process right here. This is essentially life, ladies and gentlemen. It's not the pathways themselves, it's the control of the pathways that makes what life is. And so I need for you to be able to recall this. Now, I'm not going to actually ask you to regurgitate this diagram, but you might as well memorize it, because I'll probably ask specific enough questions about each of these things. And we'll go from there. Now, these systems, I want you to circle this. These are systems that control the cell's metabolism allosterically and moment by moment. In other words, that these are crucial for the cell's survival. These are what the cell uses to survive. How am I doing? How am I doing? Am I okay? Am I okay? When you get up every morning, as soon as you return to consciousness, you do a mental checklist, don't you? You may even do it unconsciously. You kind of go, oh, how do I feel today? Did I get my, feel okay? Do I feel rested? That's kind of a thing. And that's what so the cell is doing this moment by moment. This is metabolism for keeping the cell's interrelationships within the cell under control. And these on and off things affect all the other kinds of metabolism effects, all the amino acid synthesis and degradation and fat synthesis and fat breakdown and cholesterol and all the other purine and pyrimidine synthesis and stuff. In order for the cell then to integrate with the rest of the body to do the things that the body needs to do, this is where hormone signaling comes in, where external messengers come in and change some of these, not all of them, but some of the processes in order to emphasize something that the body needs. And so there's the initial layer of this kind of control for cell survival, and this is mostly allosteric. But there is the covalent control, the phosphate, that's phosphorylation, the adipolation. There are other kinds of control as well. That then another layer of control on top of this that helps the cell then behave as a good citizen in the body and provide things for the body to do. All right, covalent systems like cyclic AMP involve the cells coordinating with a single cell's metabolism with the rest of the body by means of hormone signaling. And we'll get into that a little bit later, and I think we're done with this. Is that correct? Say yes. All right. Now, what is the next chapter I have for you? Chapter 21? Well, you know...
Yeah. The problem with doing photosynthesis right now is that it's kind of a, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. I probably should do 22 first, but you don't have 22, do you? Did you download 22? What? Oh, that's right, and I didn't do it, did I? All right. Okay. I can't do it today. I'm not prepared. And good grief, is it 9:20 already?
Yes.
Now, don't be that. Don't say that too anxiously. And thank you very much for reminding me. I appreciate the reminder. I'll try to put that on my list of things to do, and I'll do that first thing Wednesday morning. Now then, we have lab this afternoon for those of you taking the lab. Is that correct? Yes, meet upstairs at 3:17. We probably redox problem. Okay, we probably are just, we will not be doing a lab today. We'll probably just go over the requirements of the lab. I'm not really prepared to do a lab today, but anyway. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you on Wednesday. And or we'll see you this afternoon. It's all good.